This is the Fourth Estate on RCR Reality Check Radio.
Good afternoon. You're with Reality Check Radio on this pleasant spring day, Friday, November the 1st, 2024. I'm your host, Marty Gibson, and this is The Fourth Estate, a show where we take a critical look at the media, what it reports, what it doesn't report, how it reports it, and why. And joining me today are two friends of mine from over the Kaimai Ranges. Anna McLaughlin is part of the communications and media team at New Zealand Doctors Speaking Out with Science, and has had plenty of first-hand experiences of the significant censorship New Zealand's media impose on inconvenient truths as she tries to shed light on the many injustices that have come out of the COVID response, particularly in relation to health and healthcare. Good afternoon, Anna.
Hi, Marty. How are you?
Oh, good, thanks. And also joining us is someone who has hit the same brick wall of media fact boycott, but from a different angle. Penny Marie is an independent reporter, researcher, speaker, and coach. She recently toured the country talking about sex education in schools, particularly the 10-inch thick gender ideology curriculum, as part of her Let Kids Be Kids roadshow. She writes at Pendulum on Substack. Welcome, Penny.
Hi, Marty. And hi, Anna. It's good to be here.
Hi, Penny.
We should have done it in the same room, but I guess there's room for that later. But Penny, let's start with the story that you and a Dutch friend recently broke that went around the world. Bill Gates lost a groundbreaking lawsuit and now, I understand, must appear before a Dutch court. In many ways, this is a great nexus of so many of the things we talk about on RCR, the underreporting of the large financial interests and the role they play in shaping policies that affect us all, the need to hold them to account and for the public to understand what's going on, as well as the need for sober, accurate reporting of those issues. Tell us about how you came to be involved in this and how it's going.
Yeah, sure. Thank you. It's pretty exciting because 2 years ago, I joined a network called, at the time it was Reignite Freedom, which Monica Smit was launching, and there was a media network within that. And so in that, I met a woman called Erica Crick, and she lives in the Netherlands. And we hit it off. She interviewed me, actually, when Monica was over in the Netherlands. And she had seen me speaking outside TVNZ when we did a march against the mainstream media. And I did a plea to the mainstream media, like, we just need a few of you to turn and we will help you if you come to your senses and speak the truth. So she saw that interview and she interviewed me on her show, and then we became really good mates. So we've been in touch for 2 years, and then a year ago we decided to create a little platform called Free Birds Media, which is just me and her talking about kind of global issues, you know, things that you wouldn't normally hear about. And she focuses a lot on the immigration stuff. So she'd been covering this case it's not just about Bill Gates, there's a heap of other high-level people involved for a few months, but the reports had mainly been in Dutch. And so she contacted me when this, it's just called an incident where the case was being dealt with, and Bill Gates had gone back and put an incident claim in and said, you don't have jurisdiction, I don't live in the Netherlands. So the piece that we were reporting on was literally that the judge ruled that they do have the jurisdiction. And so I was actually traveling over in Europe at the time and finally getting to meet my friend who I've only met on Zoom calls for 2 years. And so the story was breaking and we hung out for a week and just got to know each other face to face, which is really important for me.
Amazing. That's a whole other story, isn't it? That Penny's tour of Europe.
Yeah, it is. But it's actually just a story about the power of personal connection and not just resharing stuff that you see from someone that you think you trust, but you've never met. So for me, that's super important. So we got to hang out for the week. And then kind of at the end of that, because her story had been, I mean, her website obviously can be translated into English, but, you know, do people know that it's there? And so I just dropped it onto my Substack, and literally I had no idea what was going to happen, but I had some people in mind that I wanted to share it with. And that was Adrian McRae and Dr. Peter Speicher, I don't know how to say his name, and who are dealing with that Port Hedland case in Australia. And so I just literally had someone in mind and thought it'd be cool if I could just share this information. I'll pop it on my Substack. Shared it on X. Anna actually shared it on NZDSOS, and it just went boom. So I don't know. I think Anna's ones had over 100,000 views. But what started happening was my Substack, which had less than 1,000 followers, now this post has been read by over 70,000 people, and it keeps getting restacked onto big channels. So yeah, this morning I just found out that it was an element of it was shared on Peter McCulloch's site. He actually shared the follow-up article, which the Children's Health Defence did. So really, I mean, it started off being a story of, hey, let's get some news that's on the other side of the world that probably most people here and in other places wouldn't have heard of, because it's largely in Dutch. That's kind of how it started.
Yeah, right. And Anna, you obviously you've shared it. How's your reach going with NZDSOS? Because you must have encountered, as I alluded to in your intro, a few walls against pretty legitimate information and certainly legitimate questions.
Yeah, we sit up against a giant brick wall of censorship or shadow banning, whatever you want to call it. It's a very, very difficult space on social media to be able to get reach. At one point at the end of last year, we were sort of sitting around, let's say, 35,000 views. By January, because we posted on a controversial topic, it was down to sort of a couple of hundred. So
Right.
we, in between, we were contacted, which I think this is an interesting segue with regards to Bill Gates, as Penny and I were discussing the other day, is we were actually contacted by a company called NewsGuard in the States, which is a news rating site. And this site is actually run. It's partners with the US Department of Defense, MSN, Microsoft Education, all of that sort of thing. So Bill Gates is partnering with this place called NewsGuard, who rate your website and rate the information or disinformation based on either who's aligning with this narrative or who's dissenting from it. And so it's a little bit of sweet poetic justice watching him go into court in the Netherlands to be able to be held to account for at least something that he does.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you got caught the tweet that Barry Young, who was famously the whistleblower at the Ministry of Health, he tweeted about an OIA release of the communication between the Office of the Prime Minister and the Gates Foundation, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, and it was quite unsettling. There were his tweet wrote, OIA reveals the Gates Foundation involvement with the Ardern government and COVID policy. Remember, Ardern banned discussion of safety concerns even at the cabinet level. And reading through the way it was framed to her, because there was a very select clique of people calling the shots, it was all framed in the form of impact on of COVID-19 on women, impact on women and girls, and you know, as I've quoted earlier in the week, you know, have saying that I thought summed up it all up quite well was, in my mind, it's simple. It was amazing to see the tentacles of the Gates Foundation extending right into the Prime Minister's office here. So it's yeah, as you say, Anna, it's good that you've got that particular piggy by the toe, Penny.
Well, can I just share a little bit more about that before we move on? Because NewsGuard comes into the story as well. And this is the really fascinating thing when Anna and I were chatting the other day, talking about this interview, is so what happened after our post went out viral and it just got reshared everywhere, and then people started taking it and putting it into videos and things. Some who credited us and some who didn't. So I don't know quite how big it's gone, but it's gone into multiple languages. The next thing that happened was we were contacted by Children's Health Defence because they saw it. So they interviewed both Erica and I, and they quoted us, and we shared the information. So that then went out global. And the next thing that happened was Robert F. Kennedy Jr. Stood up on stage while he was out there campaigning, and he said, "There's this case in the Netherlands, and Bill Gates has been indicted." And he hasn't been indicted. This is a civil case where the only thing that can happen if he's found guilty is financial reparations.
Just quickly, Penny, outline what the case is.
Okay, so I'll just outline the case. So the case is that there are seven plaintiffs and they've brought 17 defendants to charge, including the state of the Netherlands, and it also includes Anthony Bowler. And basically what they're doing is they're claiming that they knew via the Great Reset prior to forcing people to get jabbed that harm was going to come of them. So it's unique in that way as well, that they're not talking about what's in the vaccine or anything like that. They're actually talking about the fact that these high-level people knew what they were doing. They purposely implemented the Great Reset, and then they provide all the evidence on that. So some of the other people that are included is Mark Rutte, who was the Prime Minister of Netherlands during the pandemic and is now, guess what, the Secretary General of NATO. The former Minister of Health in the Netherlands, the Deputy Prime Minister, who also worked for the United Nations for over 10 years, and also the CEO of Pfizer, Albert Bowler. So all of these people are contained in this case. But the story that we broke was because Bill Gates was the only one who went back and said, you don't have jurisdiction because I don't live in your country.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a two-way, really interesting thing because of what they're charging them with, and then also the fact that, well, if the judge in the Netherlands can find that they have the jurisdiction, then what other countries might find that as well?
Well, the amazing thing is that Bill Gates is allowed to be involved with this stuff at all, given that he's not a doctor. He comes from a family that was very much associated with the eugenics movement. If you look at what's happened in his various vaccination programs in Africa and India, there's all sorts of evidence that they had terrible death rates from them. And also, I'm not sure whether this has been confirmed or not, but there was evidence to suggest that he'd put a component to compromise fertility into some of the vaccinations. So, you know, if you put those things together, you'd think he wouldn't be able to get involved with this stuff without a media that was doing what it should do, questioning it deeply. I guess,
yeah, that's right.
If we go back to NewsGuard, so NewsGuard had been running interference for him.
Well, so what I didn't, so NewsGuard contacted Erica and said, I read your article regarding the recent case. Your coverage has been cited in many other news websites and other activists, so they're labelling us, in the past few days, and has particularly gained traction after Robert F. Kennedy Jr. said yesterday that Gates has been indicted in the Netherlands for lying to the public about the COVID vaccine. And then he quoted an X post, which I've just gone and had a look now, and it's got over 5 million hits. So there's multiple platforms that are posting this video about Robert F. Kennedy Jr. saying this. And it says, however, the ruling in your reporting would indicate that this is a civil lawsuit, not a criminal case, and therefore there is no ruling. Would you say it's accurate to call it indicted, considering it's not a criminal case? So we just went back to them and said, we never claimed that it was, that he was indicted.
Yeah, right. So that's not bad on their behalf, is it? They actually seem to be doing their job, you know.
That's right. So I went and checked them out, and I was like, well, actually, we need these fact checkers who are actually looking at all these extensive claims. And so I contacted Children's Health Defence and let them know that Bobby had probably been, maybe I want to say, has been given incorrect information from the script writers and things, and that's all I could do. So I kind of looked at it and went, well, you know, kind of fair enough. If you look at their website, they're calling out the lies being told, particularly around in the lead up to the election. But then when I was talking to Anna, and she brought in this NewsGuard situation, and she's like, you know, that they partner with Microsoft and all of the Bill Gates stuff, so it's not, perhaps, and I know that they use AI to troll to find this stuff, but nothing is neutral out there, right? Apart from us grassroots people, and even then.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, I mean, there were still quite a few. I mean, I had some involvement with NZDSOS around the time you got involved with them, Anna, and there was that wide-eyed thing that many of them had. It's like, well, this is true. Why aren't they reporting it? I assume a lot of that's worn off now, and they're like, oh, they just don't want to, or they're being
they're not allowed to.
And I often quote Mike Benz as saying, the two most censored news stories. And they started censoring with AI about 2017, which, you know, when it really took off. But the two most censored news stories were anything about COVID-19, particularly vaccines, and the dangers associated with fraud and mail-in ballots. So, you know, that's interesting in itself.
That's telling, isn't it?
So have you found X a bit better, Anna? Like, have you used...
Yeah, it's borderline. It's sometimes, to be honest, sometimes we get a much greater reach on Facebook, which I find quite interesting with regards to the connection of even, say, the FBI influencing Mark Zuckerberg in the Hunter Biden case, say, but and them wanting to censor. But no, social media is a very, very difficult space to be able to gain reach. And I mean, even Jessica Rose, who is in... just incredible scientist over States Canada way, she is saying, I've just lost 100 followers that I just gained and they've all gone within the last 5 minutes. So there's censorship in all angles. We're hitting censorship in the mainstream media. We're hitting it in social media. We're hitting it through our website with regards to the NewsGuard rating that's rated us low and untrustworthy and things like that. So we're constantly battling up against these brick walls of censorship, wanting to silence this dissenting view. And I think that's where I get a little bit worked up, because Bill Gates is not a doctor, yet he's influencing medical policy and quite significantly internationally. He's not a climate scientist, and yet he's influencing climate policy internationally. And he's not a media journalist, yet he's influencing what is said right throughout the media. And there's this insane lockstep approach that you see, you watch these key messages being hammered home constantly. And at the moment we're seeing Nazi stuff. And I just am dumbfounded at some of the connections that they're attempting to make of these people, that if you speak out with a different opinion or you do something that you put your head above the parapet that takes a risk, you are labelled a Nazi. Mm.
Have you had any wins with mainstream media? Are they starting? Because, you know, we've recently had Tauranga's cardiologist, Dr. Dean Boddington, burn out, right? Saying the health system relies on doctors overworking. That's, you know, that has been a feature for pre-COVID as well. But one of my friends who's a medical specialist was telling me that he was seeing on some forum that this guy had drawn the connection between his greatly increased workload and the vaccine rollout, and yet there was not even the faintest hint of that in the media coverage of it here. Had you tried to put something together for that?
Not in relation. I put a social media post out, but we have not done any written analysis on that as it stands. But basically what we're finding is that particularly if you go back and look, there's only been about 4 or 5 mentions of NZDSOS in the media since our inception. So it's not even a case of any publicity is good publicity. It's literally no publicity.
And I've said before, a frequent criticism of NZDSOS is it only represents a tiny fraction of the doctors in New Zealand. But as someone who's, it's come out in the last couple of weeks, someone who's had a ringside seat into watching the government persecute and prosecute Phil McDonald, an eye surgeon with an impeccable record of about 15 years treating patients, and the nail that sticks up gets hammered down situation that doctors face. And, you know, a lot of the NZDSOS people are at the end of their careers, and so they could go, well, you know, I can risk it, whereas younger doctors can't. And I think that's something that, and not everyone's temperamentally able to take that kind of ostracization, are they?
Definitely not. It's very, very difficult.
The media changes when you see it in action doing that, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Do you know what I think though is, and it's really interesting to hear, Anna, that you've been pretty much ignored. And I just think of Gandhi's quote, first they ignore you, then they ridicule you, then they fight you, and then you win. And so I've found the same with Let Kids Be Kids. Like we talk about, a different topic there. But we've been largely ignored. And I really believe that it's because of the way that we communicate, because we're not going in making these crazy extreme claims and calling people names and all of that. We're sticking to facts and evidence, and it's very hard for them to argue that. So actually they're doing the ignore part, because the only time that mainstream media has picked up the work that I do with the kids was when they were trying to say that we shouldn't have been running a public meeting, and parents shouldn't be in a taxpayer-funded venue talking about things that concern them. And so they came to me saying, well, we're going to write this article. What are you going to do about it? And so I went back and said, who put the complaints in? Because we didn't have any people at the meeting of about 50 people. And it was the deputy mayor of Nelson, who is clearly, to me, a person who he's a Green Party member, and he's very left-leaning. And so he made these claims, and he called me all these names. He called me a transphobic, homophobic, and it's like, well, who are you? I mean, I said, well, were you at the meeting? Do you know what we talked about? And that's the only thing that Stuff has reported on, which is quite hilarious, because really any thinking person, they've actually just led them to our website and everything. So I take that as a win. If they choose to parlay with us, how do we use that to our advantage? But I think it's the way we communicate that's really, really important.
Yeah, I mean, RCR is the same. It hasn't been for want of poring over what we say and looking for anything that can be used to characterize us in a very negative way. We're just very, I think there's a certain type of person who's good to have involved in it, who is pretty level-headed and it cares about kids, and I think we're kind of through the initial phases, when the people who are activists seem to be the people who've been activists for a while and are a little bit, they're interesting folks often. Anyway, speaking of heavy-handed suppression of free speech that doesn't suit the fat controllers, we're now seeing the resolve of the National Party tested as they're coming under pressure to follow Australia's lead and ban Candice Owens from speaking in New Zealand. They've banned her in Australia. And the ABC reported as right-wing American, normally they say far-right, American commentator Candace Owens has been refused entry to Australia for her upcoming speaking tour. Immigration Minister Tony Burke confirmed the conservative online influencer would not be granted a visa, saying Australia's national interest is best served when Candace Owens is somewhere else. And the criticisms were from downplaying the impact of the Holocaust with comments about Joseph Mengele through to claims that Muslims started slavery. Candace Owens has the capacity to incite discord in almost every direction. Now, I'm always interested in what Owens has to say, but the nature of social media and how prolific she is on it means I haven't heard everything she said, and it's likely that some things she said were incorrect and some were hurtful to people or both. But that's the risk we take when we allow free speech, isn't it? As far as I can tell, her big crime is to try and bring nuance to debates, and that's very. The media doesn't really deal in nuance very much, does it? Either something's totally safe and effective, or it's not. And either someone's hates Jewish people, or hates Muslims, or hates trans people, or
I think the important thing here is to go back to the law on this. Like, what is the law about being able to refuse somebody in? So whether you agree with someone's stance or not, and even if they're a divisive character, is it correct by law that they can arbitrarily decide that someone who doesn't have a criminal charge and is just saying something that someone decides, and this is where the hate crime stuff is really a worry, look at what's happening in England,
I'll recognize it when I see it, right?
because there's no crime unless they create they create a framework by which they call it a crime to have free speech. And so I'm just looking at the article now, and it says, like we saw from the visit to Posy Parker at the end of last year. Well, I actually believe, and correct me if you think I'm wrong, the Posy Parker situation, which was I think organized in good intention, was utilized by the side that would shut down free speech to weaponize it, because that's what they refer to all the time. And they refer to it even in school lessons about a moment in time where trans people became stigmatized and discriminated. Whereas actually, I think that they weaponized on purpose, and then all the media did what they did so that they can forever tell that story their way. Right. So it doesn't have anything to do with the law. It's all to do with the media narrative about this.
Yeah,
And
it's
the
kind of look what you made me do, isn't
Yep.
it? It wasn't 70-year-old women punching 20-something-year-old pro-trans men in the face. It was the other way around.
It is, but the thing that I look at is where that keeps popping up. Where does that story, that one story that about the Posy Parker thing, keep popping up to be weaponized against us? So it's popping up in school lessons to show that, I've seen it in research and articles that they use it to say that trans people are, what is it, discriminated against, and they're using it to, weaponize leaning media and then putting it into education, which then and then it puts it into policy.
Yeah,
I find that really concerning.
the concern that if you say this, it might cause other people to become violent and angry. Yeah, it is a pernicious argument.
It's
Anna,
deeply concerning.
what are your thoughts on that?
If I can go back to what we spoke about before, she's actually been labelled at some point a Nazi lover. And I sat there and I listened to her yesterday, and she played the video that they say where a Jewish leader says that she sort of thought Hitler was wonderful or whatever. She actually didn't speak about Hitler in that context at all. She spoke about nationalism. And being, and she said Hitler was a globalist, and I am for nationalism. And I was absolutely dumbfounded at the narrative that was created around around her and whatever's gone on with regards to the Jewish community, and the blatant untruths that were being expressed and manipulated through the media. It was very, very, very contrasting, I think, when you saw what was being said about her versus what actually happened, because she's got video evidence of it.
Yeah, and when you listen to her, she's such an articulate, as I said, nuanced thinker. And when you listen to people saying that's got to be stopped, and criticizing Jewish people is a bit of a third rail. It's something that you need to be careful about, because it does it is
Triggers
problematic.
a response.
Yeah, it does trigger response, and there's plenty that is open to question in terms of the origins of a lot of the things that we're dealing with. And I think that one of the reasons that Candace Owens is so problematic to them is not to Jewish people exclusively, but to this politically correct censorship complex, is it does break the narrative that black people are victims of this Renaissance mindset of reason. And so to have her coming at it with reason and pushing personal responsibility rather than victim culture, it's got to be stamped out. That's the impression I get from the persecution of it. And the interesting thing is, Young Labor, the young chap from Young Labor who's jumped all over it, is an interesting little insight into our own breeding ground for this left-wing zealotry in New Zealand. Young Labor leader Ethan Rout, I apologise to him if I mispronounce his name, Riley. Wants New Zealand to deny Candace Owens' visa for her speaking tour. So he's called on the coalition government to deny entry to far right. This is from Scoop commentator Candace Owens, who is scheduled to visit Aotearoa in November 2024. So he warns that Owen's record of a divisive, hate-filled rhetoric threatens New Zealand's values of inclusivity and compassion. So the inclusion of her opinions threatens our inclusivity.
It's a really interesting one because the article that I just read about it, like I said before, links back to the Posey Parker thing. And it makes me think, again, they're leveraging one event to say, well, look what happens when someone explosive comes to speak. And then all these riots happen and all this horrible stuff.
Look, well, actually,
yes, but that was a pre-organized attack by the trans activist community, right? And the police stood back. So I just want to go back to where
point as well, the police saying it's not our job to protect you.
Yeah.
Incredible. Gosh,
it's crazy. I just want to say, I put an article out recently on the Daily Telegraph and on my own thing with Let Kids Be Kids around the queering stuff, and just want to quickly reference it back, because in the PPTA's paperwork where they're saying we want queer liaisons or rainbow liaisons in every high school, one of their sources of reference of proving that we need this because our trans children are marginalised in schools is the Posey Parker event. And what they say is, in 2023, hate crimes against transgender and gender diverse individuals doubled compared to the previous year. And the reference they used, Radio New Zealand News article. So you see how this goes around and around, and then they use it to lobby into policy, and it wasn't even a truthful report of what happened. So maybe they're then using that as the precedent by which they're stopping Candace Owens from coming into the country, because they say, well, when Posey Parker, and that was in the news article, when Posey Parker came, this happened. Now, Anna and I went to the Children's Health Defence Conference in America last year together, which was an amazing opportunity. And the same thing happened there. Monica Smith from Australia, who's an outspoken person, you know, probably a bit similar to Candace maybe, she was meant to be a speaker at the conference, and her visa got denied at the last minute, and she had been allowed in, it was all sorted, and then they pulled it. So she couldn't come to the conference. And I remember at the time thinking, because she went out quite loud online about it, and I remember going, shh, because Anna and I are going over there too, and I don't want them to start looking at all everyone's visas and going, who's flying into that state at that time, and who, and what work have they been doing at home? So that's how far-reaching this stuff is, and it impacted us personally, really, that someone from just across the ditch couldn't get to a conference that we were getting to.
Yeah, it's quite chilling, isn't it? Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, the interesting thing is, you know, speaking of the Jews, is, you know, we know what it's like for the government to give you a name that starts with the. It's normally never a good sign, and to encourage your countrymen to view you as an enemy and dangerous to them. It's a time-honored tactic, and when you're in the grinding wheel of it, you do get a uniquely chilling insight into what's going on, don't you?
Yep,
you well, really, to me, really do.
Media is the way that they did it, right? Because media is propaganda, and that's, I think, probably for all three of us, that's why we do what we do. And I'm just going to read Edward Bernays's book called Propaganda, because he's the grandfather of propaganda, which became public relations, right?
And we've all worked in that field, and that's the interesting thing about having you both on, is we've all worked in that field of persuasion. Or Anna, you qualified to be the Prime Minister.
No, just the same qualifications as
from the same place too.
From the same university.
Like, weren't you a year apart or something like that?
Oh, about 3 years behind, 4 years behind.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, well, you know, it's
well,
about
we could be talking to the Prime future Minister. Prime Minister.
Definitely not my thing. But I think what I'm struggling with regards to the Candace Owens thing, or just the hate speech initiatives, is I'm looking at that Scoop article there, and what it is such emotive language. Mm-hmm. When did it happen when did it change, or why did it change from media presenting the facts as they were, taking out the emotion, which is what I was trained to do? You take out the emotion in your writing and present the facts as they are. You do the upside down triangle. You get the most important things out first and leave the waffle to the end. But we are seeing enhanced security if entry is permitted, increased support for anti-hate initiatives, narratives. And what the media are doing with these articles is not only telling people what to think, they're telling people how to feel. They're trying to create an emotive response in order to manipulate and control a population through fear. And I've got a real problem with that because it is completely unethical journalism. I mean, I was lectured at university with one of the guys who came in. He spoke to us and he was the head of a major New Zealand newspaper at the time, and he actually still is. And he said to us in our lecture, "My primary ethical consideration is to make money. So you need to become aware of this now, that your primary ethical consideration heading into any kind of journalism kind of thing is to make money." And so what these headlines do, what this rhetoric is doing, is manipulating a population to be able to stay in that fear mindset, bypassing the prefrontal cortex and staying in this unlogical emotion in order to keep on reading and getting their fix.
Yeah, right. The old lizard, the lizard brain. And, you know, something I've been really interested in a lot lately is that, you know, there's a section of the population that works really well for. And then there's about, and this was something that came up at the NZDSOS conference with your last speaker. And there's about 10% that it really doesn't work on. And so the challenge as being that 10% isn't to project on the 70% who are just, you know, what do I do? It's not to project your own way of seeing the world on them. It's to kind of think, well, what's the world like from their perspective? You know, often they're terrified and they just want to be good. So, you know, you can hear that in old Ethan Riley, where he's thinking, what do good people think this? Oh, I want to be a good person, so I think this. It's not that they sort of take the whole logic out of it.
There's a lot of young people involved in the mainstream media's writing right now. And so I just was having a look back at data on Shania Lau, because he was a journalist for the New Zealand Herald and quite young, you know, and most people know Shania Lau's name. So he was doing hit pieces regularly on Bethlehem College, for example. Mm. So he had a direct attack. Now he's served as a global youth leader for Open Government Partnership. He's now apparently, and I don't have the data, and even Wikipedia hasn't updated it, now he's inside the Labour Party. So if he's involved in Young Labour and he's got a political bent, he was involved with Chris Hipkins around the Ministry of Education. You know all the things he's done. He's an activist. He also organised a counter protest outside for the Posy Parker event. So you think about that one person and his tentacles that have come down through global youth leadership. He's in media, he's in politics, he's in policy making, he's in lobbying, and he's also in counter protests against people that are just trying to have a conversation about women being in safe spaces. So you've got these weapons, and I think what people are more and more becoming aware of and need to remember as they're getting swayed emotionally, like Anna was saying in this monkey brain, is this is a military grade operation where they are weaponizing media to affect the population. And then as long as we're divided, as long as we're angry or in fear, they have the control. And they're laughing at us because we're so divided over the racial stuff and the gender stuff and the environment stuff and the political stuff. They're laughing because as long as we are scattered, they're in control. And they're doing it through the media.
About that is all that stuff really kicked off about 2012, 2013. If you graph the appearance of the words trans and racist, it just shoots off like a rocket about that time. And not by any accident, that was about the time that the left started identifying the banking system and its propensity to privatize profits and socialize losses through Occupy Wall Street. And meanwhile, the right, you know, was identifying the cozy relationships between big government and military-industrial complex with the Tea Party. And so they really didn't want us talking about that. And you know, the other point I make rather a lot is that, you know, people have been mistakenly thinking that they're the customer of the Fourth Estate. They're not the customer. They're part of the product mix. They're the listeners.
100%. And social media exacerbates that, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's and as I said, I mean, in a lot of ways, well, I guess all of us are the start of what comes next. It's just whether we can we don't have too much mulch on top of us, so our spring shoots can bloom. If I may wax lyrical for a moment.
I mean, I was just thinking about the term anti-vax as one example of how if you tell a lie often enough, it becomes the truth, right? So they're leveraging the consistency of saying certain things to then attach a label that which then becomes the thing. So the anti-vax thing, if you step back from it, doesn't even make sense because a lot of the people that are called it are vaccine injured. So they got vaxxed, they weren't anti-vax. And so even, you know, that's why, you know, people like us, we try and change the conversation and we don't call it that. We call it vaccine hesitant or pro-choice or for informed consent. But you see the same word again and again and again. And so it's imprinted now into the language. And so you're just attaching all of these hyper-focused labels onto people. And then people are in that monkey mind. They just call it off the cuff like it's real. And it's like, wow, that is the power of media. So so I look at it like, well, what's the solution? The solution is the power of media. So it's us doing this consistently, speaking the truth, referencing our facts, being really clear that we're not sensationalizing or making false claims, that we don't use blamey, negative, angry phrases, but that we come in curious and we come in loving and we come in with truth. And like, you know, what Anna was saying, if she's mostly being ignored by mainstream media, first they ignore you. You know, you're not playing into their trap.
Yeah, and watertight data as well is the challenge. Watertight and immaculately referenced, and you know, I mean, pretty quickly into, you know, at the start of our journey, Anna, soon after, we had a cup of tea when we were scratching our heads and thinking how we might put our shoulders to the wheel with all of this. I realized it wasn't for a lack of really good quality writing and readily available data that the thing wasn't getting headed off at the pass the way as one of that 10% I'd expected to be. So is there any change in strategy, or is it a case of just going with what Matthias Desmet says and just got to keep speaking out?
I had lunch with him when I was in Lisbon.
What's he like?
Eh?
What's he like?
Yeah, he's nice, good guy. So, yeah, speaking our language, the messages, we've got to keep speaking out. I think we need to increase the and actually this morning I was just listening to the first ever interview I did on RCR with Natalie Cutler-Welsh, and we were talking about media. We were talking about co-opetition, which is her word, which is we're not in competition to each other when we're on these different platforms. We need to be in cooperation with one another. Mm-hmm. And I see it very much like everybody out there now that we've got social media and 1,000 different channels, and I know Anna's going to talk about the stats on mainstream media versus alternative media, but everyone's siloed in their own choices of where they're choosing to look. Are they only on Facebook? Which channels do they subscribe to? For me, my strategy, and I've been testing it out with my own things, and, you know, the Bill Gates thing was an example of the first one that went viral, but we have to be prepared to be everywhere with our best information in order to reach out into people in all the different echo chambers. And the people that know what's going on and are on those, I say to our people and let kids be kids all the time, I'll create the tools. I'll put the tools in your hand. You've got to pick them up and use them. So use the good information. Share the RCR interviews with someone. Ask a question. Drop it into a chat group. Put it on a messenger group. People have got to get actually like stopping thinking, oh, those people are speaking the truth, so I don't need to do anything. Everybody could share something or post something or have a conversation or print something out.
Oh, it grinds my gears, Penny. You know that the how few shares you get with really good quality information, and just sort of sometimes to make myself crosser, I put some trivial post of eggs my chickens are laying or something. It'll get all these likes. I think you guys are watching that. You're just not sharing. You know, you're just not sharing the stuff that's far more important. And if I was a girl posing in a bikini, moaning about how I felt unattractive, I'd get thousands of views. But the stuff that's going to compromise the health mentally and physically of our children. People are really, I don't know, sheepish about coming right out and saying, hey, this isn't acceptable.
Mm.
Astonishing.
I think that's because we have been, I mean, through the media, we have been separated into groups. Yeah. And when you're wanting to sort of control people and make things, but push a certain culture in a direction, you want to be able to say, well, the safe group is the big group and the big group's over here and they're the ones that are going to protect you, because everybody has this instinctual desire to be safe. And so a smaller group is more threatening to that sort of monkey mind, I guess. And so when you're getting people who are they're telling you a certain thing that, okay, say we've got children's health, vaccines. It's a very controversial topic. Are you a dirty anti-vaxxer? Well, that's that minority group, and we're in this big group over here, and we're going to be safe because we've believed this specific narrative. Is there any science? The jury's still out on that. It seems to be that there is a whole lot of safety
really
data.
Yeah. Do you think journalists tell themselves, you know, as they're pushing that? Because is it that, hey, I'm all for free speech, but just the right sort of free speech? How do they rationalize it so they can look themselves in the mirror? Or have they gone from one bottle of Chardonnay a night to two bottles, do you think?
Would you bite the hand that feeds you? You look at the sponsors of mainstream media in America, they're all pharmaceutical companies.
Yeah.
You don't want to speak out against something that's funding your paycheck. And that's a really harsh reality to accept if you're working in journalism at the moment.
It's been a selection process, hasn't it? I guess the ones that are still there are the ones who can rationalize it to themselves.
Well, we should be looking at the quality of the training that they're doing, like through the universities, to become what they do. But you also, you know, I mean, you guys would too as well, but you talk to people who have been long-term media people, and they know that for a really long time they have been controlled as to what goes out. So they, and my sister actually used to be a journalist, and she said that 20-something years ago, that she would write an article based on fact and the editor would edit it and say, well, you can't put it out like that, and they change them. So even if a reporter is trying to balance it, and it goes back to what Anna said at the beginning, they're more interested in profits than truth, and the public need to know this.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, a thing that I've scratched my head about, if we can move to this, is the coverage of the New Zealand media of the US election, and just how universally, so much of New Zealand's US news comes from firmly Democrat outlets, doesn't it? CNN, Washington Post, New York Times. So we get their Trump derangement syndrome and large helpings and a lot of stories about how much better Kamala Harris' presidency would be for New Zealand and how twice as many New Zealanders prefer her to Trump, the widowy Hitler stuff. And I have my suspicions that it's to get us primed to accept the steal. As I said, you know, the blob's most censored, one of the most censored issues using AI is any talk, even if it's true, of ballots being stuffed and things like that. So, you know, we saw that, we'll talk about the coverage of Trump's Madison Square Garden rally. What's New Zealand's media revealing about itself and its coverage of the US election, Anna, do you reckon?
Again, they're in that lockstep narrative approach.
Globalist, you could say. It's very much a nationalist versus globalist thing.
Yeah, I guess, yeah. It just, so when you do a campaign of any kind, you usually set up a communications plan. And that communications plan are risks and contingencies and how you're going to manage them, but also key messages. What are you going to say? And how do you, when you come up against this risk, what is a key message to be able to build a contingency to fix it? And it almost seems like whoever is in charge of this campaign with Kamala Harris, and to be honest, I subscribe to neither of those political parties. I'm not a fan of Kamala Harris. I'm not a fan of Trump. But when I watch what's going on over there with the media and then it also being portrayed in exactly the same way. They actually put on One News the other day that they had a full sort of sentence of Kamala Harris and then cut Trump off mid-sentence as part of their article. And I thought that was really interesting, just as a little nudge there to be able to influence slightly, subliminally, that Kamala Harris is more intelligent than Trump. And boy, oh boy, has that media, particularly in the States, just blown me away with the manipulation of a specific narrative. I guess that takes you back to what I learned at university. The primary ethical consideration here is to make money. And you think, well, and that's why I know in New Zealand, media trust is at an all-time low. And then you go over to the States and their ratings on their mainstream media outlets are dropping like stones off a bridge. It is unbelievable because they want to be able to select who they listen to. And they also don't want to be basically parroted from a teleprompter by these basically government agents. And that's probably quite an extreme term, I guess. But they are receiving messages. They are receiving these media releases.
Yeah, well, if you look at that point, the language where the main object is to make money. And, you put up that interview with Cody Sanchez, and she mentioned that, you know, 1 3-hour show, cumulative total for the week's viewers was $83,000. And I mean, it wasn't that long ago that the cost to set up a television station was $500 million. And that was 10, 15 years ago. So the return that these guys need from those viewers, which, as I said earlier, are part of the product mix, you know, you wouldn't think, I mean, in the same way as 3 News isn't really a financial going concern at the moment, but still it keeps going. It's got some role to play that seems to defy a business case.
Well, stuff was bought for a dollar. So you got to think that that's a political takeover there.
Yeah, they're sort of keeping it going, and they're keeping it going with the printed, you know, all this printed money. I guess we were coming up against time a little bit, but I was interested in talking about climate change. There was a Barry Brill article I shared, which was talking about how New Zealand's liabilities at the moment under its Paris Accord agreement are $30 billion. What really interests me about that is the paucity of coverage of it, and particularly when you factor in, I mean, you know, recently we've had just days and days and days of front page news because the government said to Dunedin, hey, your cost's blown out for making this hospital, you're going to have to cut your cloth to suit. So, you know, we're going to have to cut the amount we're spending on it by $1.5 billion. Otherwise, we're going to have to cut other areas of New Zealand. And the mooing. But this $30,000 debt, a lot of which has come about because of this quixotic effort by people like James Shaw to include New Zealand's agriculture in our climate change targets, despite it being specifically exempted by the original Paris Accord agreement. What's shaping the coverage of climate news, do you think? Because it's very definite, isn't it? There are some things which you can't talk about that $30 billion, but you can talk for 4 weeks about that $1.5 billion. It seems odd. Yeah.
The silence certainly is deafening. Well, I often wonder during the Ardern years, there was another few billion dollars given to climate change in the South Pacific. Where did that go? Who received it? How is it being used?
Well, a lot of those islands are growing, so maybe it's made the sea level go down. Maybe there was some King Canute action going on. It's a lot of money, and it's certainly if I put my put my paranoid about who owns the media hat on, the same people who are going to get to print that $30 billion are probably the same ones who own the private equity firms that own the corporations that advertise in the media that they also own. So it's a bit of a shell game, isn't it?
I mean, what I have to say about that is I was looking through a year 12 legal studies paper, okay, and what it said in there, and I've been trying to find my piece of paper that I did, wrote it on to quote it, but basically what it's teaching kids in school is that Parliament makes decisions on behalf of what's best for the people, and the people that hold them in check are the media. The media are the watchdogs of Parliament to make sure that what they're doing is right. Now, you think about that in the sense of we know that it's all owned and swayed, so therefore we don't have true watchdogs, so therefore what's the solution? It's us. And so I look at, you know, I don't really look deeply at the environment stuff. Like Jess Breit should, you know, and people like her should be at the forefront of sharing information, yeah, because we are pro-humanity and we want to really understand what's going on with our tax and our lives. And now she's just amazing, but you know, she gets called on mainstream media as a anti-vaxxer conspiracy theorist and linked to Voices for Freedom. I mean, that's what they say about her, and it's like she's incredible. So she's just one person, and they shut down. We're just got to keep going. I mean, when it comes to the climate, my sort of big picture view on it is King Charles launched the Great Reset in 2020 with Klaus Schwab and the World Economic Forum. Now he's the king, he's in charge, and all of our MPs swear an oath to be loyal to the king and to do his bidding in order for his protection of them. That's how I summarise it to people. So I'm like, what do you think is going to happen when he's got a document? They did a document called the Terra Carta. And you think about that, like in 1200 there was the Magna Carta. And now there's something called the Terra Carta, and it's all about the environmental sustainability. So everything we see is actually about that. You know, I look at the trans stuff. It's about depopulation. The goal is they don't want people here. So as soon as you hear about anything, you know that that's where it's coming from a really big picture. That's my take on it. I'm not the expert.
Good closing statement there, Penny. Anna, what are your thoughts, I guess, as we wrap this up?
Well, I posted something the other day on social media that I saw in the Women's Health magazine saying the climate crisis is increasing the risk of miscarriage and birth complications, says report. Mothers and newborns deserve protection. Climate solutions must include their voices. And if I take it back to that emotive language again, they're not speaking. I couldn't find anything in the report that kind of showed actual statistics that miscarriage and birth complications are happening from a storm or a flood or what have you. But what I can see is the manipulation and persuasion with the type of language that is used in that headline. And I think we all need to be able to take a step back and take our emotions out of it and have a think, what are these words trying to make me feel? And what are these words trying to make me think? And is there an actual fact or evidence-based approach behind what is being said in these articles? We just aren't able to trust the media in the mainstream as it stands at the moment. They just sprout a whole lot of propaganda, and we need to be very, very careful about what we select to be able to come into our fields so that we can really take an analytical approach and create strategies that are not only sound but really, really logical and unemotive to be able to move forward.
What a great place to leave it. Thanks so much, Anna, for coming on today, and Penny too.
Thanks so much.
Is it possible for me to just share a little quote? Because it totally, I want to end with it. And it's totally, totally backs up what Anna's saying there. But it's a beautiful quote from Neil Donald Walsh's, I'm actually listening to his audio book at the moment, Conversations with God. Failing to express your truth would hardly be appropriate, yet people do this all the time. So afraid are they to cause or face possible unpleasantness that they hide their truth altogether. Remember this, it is not nearly so important how well a message is received, but how well it is sent. You cannot take responsibility for how another person accepts your truth. You can only ensure how well it is communicated. And by how well, I don't mean just how clearly, I mean how lovingly, how compassionately, how sensitively, how courageously, and how completely. That's our call, right? Is to be really ethical, moral, and kind in how we present information. And I just trust that when you do that, people who are seeking the truth will find it.
Well, with that, we'll leave it and wrap it up. And thanks again so much for joining me. It's been so much fun, and I hope we can do it again. Have a great weekend.
You too.
Thanks, guys. It's been awesome.